This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Guys, guys, guys. Guys, guys, hello. What's the ska? Well, this is the ska. This is the documentary about the Irish ska scene. In this episode, we get the story of the Skatuesques. We recall the spirit of 69 and we meet some ska fans who tell us about the look associated with the scene. The ska scene in Ireland is open to all and welcoming to all, but for certain members of the tribe, there is a particular look that goes with the music. Ali Goggins gave me the rundown.
So the boys wear mostly jeans as a casual dress wear. They wear jeans and they wear the Dr. Martin boots or the Solivairs. They'd have their shirts, so the check shirts would be Ben Sherman's or Brutus's, and obviously really close cropped hair, so shaved hair. Some of them would wear braces, some of them wouldn't. It's kind of up to the young person's choice, I suppose. The girls can kind of vary with haircuts. So my haircut is a feather cut. I've got a fringe and I've got long kind of feathers towards the side of my face. At the back of my hair and on the crown of my head, I've got quite short hair. It's only about an inch long. But towards the back of my hair at the end, it's very long, so it kind of come down halfway to my back. But some of my friends have Chelsea cuts, so it's quite similar at the front. They have fringes and long feathers at the front, but it's totally shaved on the back, totally shaved. The clothes that we would wear would be quite similar to the guys. We wear shirts or polos, Fred Perry's, skirts mostly, so just kind of like tight skirts to go whatever colour shirt we're going with, and fishnet tights. And some loafers or Doc Martin boots as well. She's just a little cutie, and she's my new favorite. She's just a little cutie, 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 cutie. In the two-tone era, getting the right gear was important for any self-respecting skin. Cork had McCarthy's, Waterford had Roaches, but even in Listowel, a young Derek Dalton could get his clobber.
You mentioned your boots and your bomber jacket, right?
Yeah.
Where does a young lad in Listowel buy his gear?
Right. Back then, it was like in my early teens, you would have in Listowel, Listowel obviously being a farming town, like it would be like a big town in the middle of a big farming community. And so you would have, believe it or not, like Marte. And this is where I got into my clothes was, and you would have on the market, you would have like travellers would come from Limerick and they would have stalls. And there was two stalls there on every Thursday, and there was and they had shoes, but they had Docks. They had black Docks, they had Oxfords, they had monkey boots. They had all of them in the stall. And I remember going down there and my mother coming down with me, like I was only 12, 13, I was buying my first pair of Docks, like in a pair of 10 holes. And your man wanted like something like 30 quid, and my mother, 25, like, you know, and that was my first pair of Docks. You would basically turn around from that stand in and there was a man there, army surplus.
Yeah.
And like bomber jackets, black or green bomber jackets, combat pants. They were there, like, and all of a sudden, all you need to do somewhere, if you picked up a check shirt, like, it was about Ben Sherman at that age, like, you weren't going to pick a Ben Sherman shirt up around here, or a Fred Perry, or a Brutus, or anything like that. So it just had to be some sort of a check shirt thing. But I got away with it, like.
Of course you
and,
did.
But that was in my early teens. But as I got into, like, 16, 17, 18 years of age, then when I went into full-time work, I left school at 16, went straight into full-time work, and I still wanted my fashion, like I had the Docks still, and I was wearing the bleach jeans and I was wearing the t-shirts. You'd get some sort of a t-shirt somewhere, you get them out of Smash Hits, so you get them out of NME, you get them out of the magazines, you'd post away for them things. But I took a trip one day to Dublin on a Saturday. I left 7 o'clock in the morning, 5 hours on the bus to Dublin, and went down to Moore Street, and I just looked and I just seen all the shoe stalls, and the first thing that caught me was loafers, Lokis. I said, and they were the Dr. Martin ones, like, they were. I got a black pair with the tassels on them. I said, they're coming back to the stall with me anyway. Got a pair of them, walked further down O'Connell Street, the ILEX Centre, I went in there, and next thing I seen a Fred Perry polo shirt. It was a white one with just the blue tips on it. Bought that, and I looked over, and I saw a pair of red braces. I said, oh my God, like, you know. and I bought them. Down to Freebird Records, down in the Keys. You go down the stairs there. Do you remember that there?
Oh, yeah.
You go down there, and I think I spent maybe the next hour and a half flicking through records, picking this out, that out, and back onto the bus for 6 o'clock and back in the store again for 11 o'clock that night. But my day's shopping. Happy as a piggin, you know what, like.
In Yall, Michael Hussey and his mates in the various tribes lived for their music.
You see, we were teenagers. You know, there wasn't much going on but music. I mean, music was your patch, it was your identity, you know what I mean? And I can't stress how important it was. It really was your life. I mean, it was a lifestyle, but it was your life as well. Of course, you know, getting ready like the John Travolta for the weekend and all that kind of stuff for the discotheques. It was the same whether you were a ska, a rockabilly, or a, you know, it was the weekend and it was your music. And there was that mishmash of people in Cork, Waterford, Tramore, Yall, you know what I mean? And people had worn that with their colours.
But the spirit of punk infused the music and brought a DIY ethic that valued individuality. Brian Desmond explains.
Even, let's say, in the punk rock scene in the late 70s, there was no specific fashion that you had to wear. You wore a mishmash of what you got. You could have wore your father's shirt, your sister's whatever pants, leather pants. It was just you made it up as you go along, and it was just this totally anti-establishment, anti-fashion that the whole punk movement delved into.
I remember the old FCA long army heavy coats, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you must have used buckets of dye, but you dye them black.
You know,
that's right,
I mean?
Yeah. You dye, lads dye an FCA called black.
Black, yeah. And I think they might take off the brass buttons as well, I'm not sure. But it was just for the clobber, you know.
In April this year, two-tone designer John Teflon Sims visited Ireland with his This Art Two-Tone exhibition. I met him at the Retro Festival in Waterford, and he told me how he changed his look when the first wave of ska hit England.
In the first wave, I was sort of 16, 17, 18. I was kind of wearing flare trousers, you know, and but then my neighbour, a guy, a good friend, he was a couple of years younger than me, and suddenly he had a Crombie on and tonic trousers and, you know, the loafer shoes and white socks. And I kind of said, Pete, what's all this gear you got on? You know, what's all these braces and stuff, you know? And he was sort of saying, oh, no, this is the stuff, this is the scene. And so consequently, playing for a local football team, and it was decided that we're all going to go up to our sort of local club, and there was a big thing going on up there. And when I walked into the hall, it was all this reggae and ska playing. And the one thing that stuck out really for me was that Dave Barker and Double Barrel, everyone was dressed like Pete, and there was me in my flares, you know. So overnight, I dropped the flares and kind of got my tonic trousers and the like, and I kind of like really got into it. And so that was like the first wave of, you know, Trojan and stuff.
In 1969 was a big year for the development of ska. It slowed down and changed through rock steady into boss and skinhead reggae. Brian Desmond identified some of the social trends that would fuse together into the spirit of 69.
When the Windrush came, when these Jamaican guys had come to England, a lot of these guys were poor, you know, they worked in a lot of working class areas. At that time, let's say, even the skinheads in England weren't known or classified as skinheads. They probably wouldn't even worn Dr. Martens at that stage. They would have been known as, let's say, crop heads, peanuts, lemon heads. The term skinhead came around in roughly the year 1969. And it was a fusion of these Jamaican immigrants which brought their ska culture with them and what was called, let's say, hard mods at the time. And they had something in common. They were the downtrodden, they were the working class. They identified more with this new music scene that was coming to England at the time, i.e. ska music. Out of that came what's known as, let's say, the spirit of 69 or the original skinhead.
Now, some people prefer the raw Jamaican sound or the two-tone era, but Ali Goggins prefers this particular era.
I suppose my favourite type of ska music would be boss reggae or skinhead reggae. It's not as hyped and as kind of big as two-tone would be. Two-tone is very loud and very fast, and you kind of have to jump around a little bit to do the dance to it. But boss reggae and skinhead reggae will be quite slower. The more I kind of get into the scene and the more that I hear the lyrics and the music from older times, that would be my favourite. Some of my favourite songs would be Soul Ska, maybe do Clancy Eccles. I really like Clancy Eccles. Desmond Dekker as well. I really like Desmond Dekker.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir. So that every mouth can be fed. Oh, me Israelite. Get up in the morning slaving for bread, sir. So that every mouth can be fed. Me Israelite.
Trojan released hundreds of records in the 69 to 75 era, as did other distributors and labels. Few of them gathered any attention at the time, but waves of compilations and reissues give collectors and fans plenty to discover.
50th anniversary this year of the Trojan Records label being started up. That has enabled a lot of things to be unearthed. They're unearthing and reissuing a lot of stuff as a celebration of the 50th anniversary of Trojan. So that's a kind of a great way of finding more stuff and getting more accessible to people. So like I did manage to get a whole bunch of kind of compilation albums that would have been released in the kind of early 70s over in Records and Relics. And a lot of those would have been the ones that were the different subsidiaries of the Palmer label. So I was really lucky to get my hands on those. And now, sort of almost simultaneously, there's been a reissue of a lot of the stuff that was on all the different subsidiaries of Trojan. So it's like, bring it on, more stuff that is fresh and exciting to listen to and to dig through.
That was DJ Ian Fiasco, and some of the records he spins today were probably being played in clubs in Dublin where skinhead reggae attracted mods, but the sound at that time didn't appeal to RTE or the Irish mainstream. Jimmy Cliff did have a hit here in 1971 as a basic rocksteady rhythm with added strings and plush production gave his positive message pop tune Wonderful World, Beautiful People a push up the charts. Trojan era was relatively short-lived but remains loved by ska fans. In 1972, Jimmy Cliff starred in The Harder They Come, a film set in Kingston about rude boy culture with a soundtrack of great Jamaican music. Statuesques stand out on the Irish ska scene for many reasons, and they're carrying on a particular tradition, as Ian Fiasco recognises.
I love the fact that the Statuesques are an all-female group, and it brings me back to Amazulu back in the 80s. They weren't all women, but there was a majority of women in the band. There was another band called Jazzawaki that I think might have been all women. So, yeah, I think they're kind of part of the new zeitgeist.
Many bands start off with musicians goading themselves into action. But as singer Dee told me, the Statuesques have a different origin story.
How did the Statuesques get started? It's all down to one woman. One absolutely phenomenal woman, and that's Christine. That's Christine O'Reilly. I was with the Outsiders, and it was kind of coming to the end of it, I guess, a little bit. She came up to me, we were playing a gig one evening, and she was there, and she approached me and said, I have an idea. All female ska, two-tone, rocksteady band. And I just looked at her and I said, Christine, my love, you better do that now before somebody else does. A week later, she gave me a call and she was like, Dee, I'm going to do it. And she goes, so are you going to sing? And I was like, you know what? Of course I am. I was like, let's do this. Let's absolutely do this. Travel a lot too, particularly to ska festivals in England. John Teflon Sims told me about having them at his local festival.
We've had a few Irish bands come over for our festival in Folkestone, and Skartuesques from Dublin came over last year, and they're absolutely brilliant girl band. Absolutely love them. And so you've got all these young bands that are now coming through, and although they're carrying on the tunes, some are starting to write their own stuff and put it down.
Do have a look, because at the end of the day, like that, it's like you're good. At the end of the day, I know it's a very social thing and whatnot what we do, but still, it's our job. Like, you have Ariana, our bass player, Italian. She's been playing ska for a very, very long time over in Italy, so she brought that look with her, which would be kind of different to the kind of skin two-tone look, but she molded it, you know, with like the skirt, and she'd be very like Rue Girl, you know, she'd have the shirt and she'd have the hat and the tie and stuff like that. And then like Bev, for comfort, as you know, playing drums, she loves her Fred Perry's and her skinny jeans and her Docs and her braces. And then Eileen, you know, we all kind of molded, because we love the scene. But then again, you have to keep yourself as well. We take things that we love from the scene and we put it with who we are. Who doesn't want to wear a Fred Perry dress? You know? Who doesn't wanna wear braces and this and that and whatnot? It's such a dapper, beautiful look. It really, really, really is.
The Skatuesques made a video for their track Back in the Day. Ali Goggins answered the call to be in it.
You were in the Skatuesque video. What was that like for you?
That was great. It was so much fun. It was a really long day, but I think all of the hours that we put in definitely paid off. It was just something I'd never even imagined. Like, I think the way it came out was absolutely perfect. I think it's exactly what the girls were trying to get at. And I think it's a great lift for them and what they're trying to do, and the kind of, I suppose, the name they're trying to make for themselves in the ska scene. They're definitely doing a great job for it.
The band are recording an album to follow up their debut EP.
We are working on our new album at the moment, which is called Up Your Street. We want to get this out as soon as possible because we have some fantastic tracks for everybody, for every kind of ear that listens to this music. We have something for everybody on this album. We all write as a collective. Nobody just does lyrics and nobody just does melody. We all come up with ideas. We all write because I think it gives more when the music comes out, because you can hear all the different influences, because everybody has a different way of seeing the world and telling a story.
The Skatuesques have fans all over Ireland and the UK, including Derek Dalton.
I think the Skatuesques may be going 2 to 3 years maximum, like, and they're just blowing everybody away, like, very unique, being an all-girl ska band as well, like, but like their lead singer Dee Dee, like, she's the dog's bollocks of it, like, you know, in fairness, like, yeah.
We're closing this week's episode with a track that was Trojan Records' first and only UK number one record. It was also a top 10 hit in Ireland, featuring vocals toasted by Dave Barker over a rhythm recorded in Jamaica by Ansel Collins. Vincent Foley sets it up.
Yeah, I think I could be right in this, or else was the Israelites was the first UK number one that really was a kind of a ska song as such, a ska reggae, whatever you want to call it, song. If you're looking at your history of ska and you're going back, you know, various waves of it, you really do have to stop off here on this juncture as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a great song. It's an instrumentalist. It is, I know there's an open lyric to it, but it really is a kind of a piano player. Like yourself, a maestro's dream to play this, I'm sure.
The way I hear it is like a duet between the bass player and the piano player. So let's have a listen to Dave and Ansel Collins with Double Barrel.
I am the magnificent. I'm back, but the shaker was so boss, most thundering, storming, sound of soul. I am W-O-O-O, and I'm still here. Work it.
Shake it two times. Shake it.
Two-tone era is at the heart of Ireland's ska scene, and the next episode of What's the Ska is devoted entirely to all things two-tone. What's the Ska was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Written, produced, edited and presented by Anna Dowling. A community radio y'all production.
Everybody can do the sky. It's a new dance, you can't resist it.